set up this kind of deal. I'm sure it was for an ad and a promo that they were doing, but it was so neat when I saw this, that they got all these people from this community of this guy who was hearing impaired, and that all these people volunteered to spend months taking sign language classes. And so like this one day they were just going to kind of like surprise this guy and get it on camera. And so everywhere he went, all of a sudden, all these people that he had seen in his community, like that didn't know sign language, just starts like talking to him in sign language. And he's going from person to person. You guys saw the video, but like I saw his face throughout that video. I don't know if you caught that. And I love the expression as he starts to finally get like what's going on, you know, like you can tell that he has realized that people are going out of their way to do something crazy awesome for him. And at the end, he breaks down in tears as all these people come out from his community who had taken the time. Like this wasn't just a, you know, 30-second deal where it was a random act of kindness. Like this whole community came together to do this for this guy and to show him that he was part of their community, that he wasn't a forgotten part of the community, that they cared enough to learn his language, right? And I just love seeing the expression of his face of like gratitude and just like shock. Like, why would you do this for me? This is incredible. And I don't know if you can kind of think back in your life of a time where someone's done something for you, like Zach was talking about up here with his teacher, where someone's done this like act of kindness. And I wouldn't even say random. I'd say like some intentional act of kindness that's like set you back and you were like, what? Are you serious? You're doing this for me? Or maybe even a time that you've done it for someone else and you got to see their face as you were simply kind. You just showed love. You just served someone with no like obligation, no ulterior motive. You just loved someone well. And if you've ever had that happen to you, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Your mind's shooting right to that moment right now or moments because it impacted you. Like Zach's still telling that story from like, what, like how old are you? Like 50 years ago? Like something that was. Look, when you're a guest here, you get picked on from the stage. This is just part of the deal. Sorry. You can pick on me later. So I just want, like, as we're walking through this passage tonight, we're still in Acts 16 and we're still looking at Paul and this cool thing that's happening in his life. So within this bigger series that we're talking about, big choices and little moments where sometimes the biggest choices of our lives that impact eternity are hidden in these teeny little dusty moments. The moments that don't have spotlights on them, the moments where people aren't like applauding and watching, they don't seem like anything could ever come of them. They're modest moments. Sometimes, most of the time, God uses moments just like that, as we've seen through the life of Joseph and then Elijah and Ruth, and now through Paul, where God is taking these dusty moments, these little moments, and cramming these massive choices with big impacts. And so tonight we're still walking down this pathway with Paul. Last week he was walking with some disciples and they're going to find a place to pray in Philippi. And on their way out there, they're going like to the riverside. There is a group of women just like sitting there. And most people in that culture, probably a bunch of dudes would have just walked by. It was just their culture. But instead, we see they do something totally different. They paused their life. They were on a journey. Like they were trying to go somewhere. And yet they stopped. They saw these women and they took the time to sit and just start a conversation. And we saw how that little teeny conversation that didn't seem like a big deal, that most people would have just walked right by. And this woman named Lydia gets saved because of that conversation. Her eternity was changed because they had eyes to see her, because they're willing to stop and look and say, you're a person. I want to talk to you. I want to hear your story. And then her entire eternity was changed because she gave her life to Jesus that day and became the first member of the church in Philippi, the first person, this church plant that Paul is starting and doesn't even know it yet. That's the cool thing. He's just obeying God. Remember, God was like, hey, don't go there. Nope, I'm not going to let you go there. The Holy Spirit just kept stopping Paul from going places. And then he's like, okay, go to Macedonia. Finally, he gave him this call. And so Paul's just saying, yes. God's closing doors. And Paul's like, okay, he's not getting all ticked off about it. He's like, that's you directing me, God. It's okay, close the doors because it helps me find the right path. And then God opens the door. And he's like, I'm stepping through it. And so often that's how God interacts with us. He just closes doors and opens doors. And we just go, God, I'm listening. Where do you want me to go next? I'm listening to your voice. I want to say yes when I hear it. I want to invite other people along with me like Paul was doing. So this woman named Lydia gets saved, right? And then Paul continues his journey. That's where we're at tonight in Acts 16, verses 16 to 24. All right, so as they keep walking, look what happens. First of all, it says, as we were going to the place of prayer. So he's still on that journey. Like, prayer is so important to Paul. He's not going to do anything without stopping and talking to God. They were on a mission to just sit with the Lord and say, God, this isn't my plan. This isn't even like really my plan for my life. Like, it's your plan for my life. I'm not going to assume I know the answers. I'm not going to assume that I have the strategy. I want to hear, God, what you want me to do. And so they're coming together to find this place to pray. How important is prayer in your life? Would you say tonight that you're trying to like walk with Jesus? You want to live with Jesus. So here's my next question if you say yes to that. How important is prayer to you? Is it your last resort when everything's going wrong and things are burning up and your life's like crumbling? And you're like, I have nowhere else to go. Or is it the first place like Paul's doing? Will you go to the Lord and say, you're my first solution. You are the solution. I'm sitting at your feet. When you wake up in the morning, do you stop to take time to say, God, what do you want me to do today? Or do you already wake up with your plans and you're getting out of the bed and your feet are spinning and you're ready to go? Maybe after like three cups of coffee, if you're like me, then you're ready to go, you know, but you got your plan. Or do you stop and go, God, what's your plan for me today? Who are the people you want to lead me to? Who are the conversations of people that are sitting that I could easily walk by, but you want me to stop and see them and hear their story and interact with them? Maybe it's someone you need to serve in an act of kindness. And God's like, I have big plans for you today. You have no idea what I want to do through you today, but you're not stopping to talk to me to hear me tell you that. Like, you're just going on with your day, walking right by me. Imagine the plans we miss out on that God has for us because we're too busy and too distracted and too focused on our stuff. And we settle for second best when God's like, I got all this for you. Would you stop and hear me? Talk to me. Let me tell you the plans I have so you can say yes. Don't miss out. Don't miss out. Don't settle for second best when God has so many awesome things in store for you. Are you looking for those? Are you listening to his plan? So they're going to this place of prayer. So prayer is super important. We agree on that. Look what happens. He's just walking, right? He's just doing his thing. We were met again, somebody else, by a slave girl who had a spirit of divination and brought her owners much gain by fortune telling. So he goes from talking to this group of women, meets one of the most influential ladies like in that whole area, the seller of purple, Lydia, right? And she's pretty different from who he meets next. Now he's walking along and all of a sudden this slave girl who's possessed by a demon is the next person they bump into. And because she's possessed by a demon, it says that she's bringing much gain by fortune telling for her owners. Like, they're making a lot of money off of her. People are coming and be like, read the cards or let me read your palm. I don't know how she did it or what happened, but they would come and they'd make a fortune off of her. Her owners. This is a very different person. A woman who represented kind of like freedom. Like, she was like this independent businesswoman, Lydia. And now you have the most oppressed slave girl you can find. Two very different stories, but they still had the same exact need. Paul doesn't do anything different. There's no, you know, special solution for one over the other. They both needed the same thing. They both needed Jesus, and Paul knew that. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter where you're from or what you're facing. The solution's Jesus. I don't know where you're at tonight. I don't know what you're going through tonight or what your family's suffering or how bad your heart's hurting tonight. I know over the last few weeks, we've had conversations, haven't we? Like, so many of you and I have had conversations outside of here, and I've heard some of the hurt. I know that we are a group that has some pain going on. I want to tell you, there's no special solution uniquely to you. The thing we all need is Jesus. The greatest thing we could ever receive is Christ. And I hope you believe that tonight. So they meet this girl, and just, I mean, look at this woman's, this poor girl's life. What a terrifying situation she was in, all right? So she's a slave. She's owned by someone and oppressed. That's not a life. She was very likely, because of that, she was sexually abused. That was part of the deal with their slaves like this. She was physically beaten, most likely. She was mistreated and neglected. They probably didn't feed her well as a slave. I mean, she was sold into slavery probably by her parents, or even worse, maybe she was an orphan or she was stolen, but somehow she ends up in slavery as a kid. There can't be a good backstory to that. Imagine where she comes from, how she ended up there. Like, she was possessed by a demon. Like, if all the rest of that wasn't bad enough, this girl is possessed. She's not only oppressed by a slave owner, she's oppressed by a demon who's holding her in slavery. So physical and spiritual slavery that this girl is under. She's held captive. Can you imagine what she was going through? And all the while, her owners are making money off of this demon that's within her, benefiting from her pain, benefiting from her misery. And it says next, she followed Paul, right? So she sees Paul and these guys walk in, and it says, "In us, and crying out, these men are servants of the Most High God who proclaim to you the way of salvation." And this she kept doing for many days. So here's a demon-possessed girl who sees a man of God, Paul, who just does all this crazy, awesome stuff, right? And he's coming through town, and she sees him, and the demon recognizes them. Now, the demon's probably not declaring this in truth. He's probably a liar, like demons are, like Satan is. And so, in its mind, it's trying to deceive the people to not believe, so it's mocking Paul. Following him around, it says, she kept doing this for many days. So she's literally like, wherever they're going, they're trying to minister, they're seeing people, and they're like, loving on people, and she's standing right there screaming, like, yeah, these guys, you know, they think they follow Jesus. And he's like going all over for days, it says, with that right behind him, screaming, pointing, yelling, this demon trying to mock him and critique him like he thinks he has salvation to offer you, you know? And the funny thing was, in the mockery of the demon, it was actually saying the truth. He really was a man of God. He really did have salvation from Jesus that he was bringing. The words were coming out of the mouth, but the heart wasn't believing it. That's a sad place to be. You're so close to the truth. But it becomes a mockery, something that you would laugh at. You're like, I'd never do that. Have you ever stood in worship and looked around at somebody else worshiping and like laughed at them the way they were worshiping? How's that any different? Have you ever thought, oh man, this friend of mine, they're just so into Jesus, they miss out on all this cool stuff we do. How's that any different? Our hearts are so twisted. And here she is speaking truth, but it's really in the heart of that girl and that demon, it was lies, right? It's mockery. And so Paul just gets so annoyed by it, like frustrated, that he just can't take it anymore. It says, Paul, having become greatly annoyed, turned and said to the Spirit, I command you in the name of Jesus Christ to come out of her. And it came out that very hour. That had to be like this incredible scene. Like, to be able to see that type of authority. Like, here's this for days, you're just watching this girl scream and follow Paul around and yell these things as he's trying to like do the work of the Lord. And then all of a sudden, boom, the moment happens and he just stops and he looks at her. I bet his finger pointed and he was just like, get out of her. Like, the name of Jesus. And immediately this thing leaves her. This wasn't authority that Paul had. This wasn't some magical phrase he chanted. This was because Jesus has the authority over everything and everyone, including spiritual forces. It wasn't a magical trick Paul did. It was the fact that Jesus Christ was in him and acting with authority through him to command that demon to leave. I wonder if she had heard that that was going to happen, if she would have believed it ever could. I wonder if she had been so beaten down in her life, so oppressed, so hurt, so discouraged, that she would have been like, that could never happen for me. You could never fix this. You could never free me from this. How often do we feel that way, I wonder, when we feel beat down and depressed and we're facing bigger things than us and we're like, how would I ever be able to get through this? What an awesome reminder tonight, as Paul shows us in his example, that Jesus Christ has the authority over all of that junk in your life. And I don't take it lightly when I say that. I know your junk's big. I know that the things you're facing is big. I know that your hurt can be big. I know that when you look at it, if you're like me, you're probably like, how? God, like, tell me how. But I also know something else, that Jesus is way bigger. And he loves you. And he'll look at your problems and your demons and your oppression and your hurt and all of these other things. And Jesus has the authority over it to say, be gone. Do you trust him to do it? No, or are you still sitting there going, man, I've been beat down too much. I've been hurt too much. I just can't trust. I just can't believe that that could ever be a thing. Luckily, she didn't have to believe it. It was just happening. Jesus' authority was bigger than that demon, and so it leaves her. So look what happens next. But when her owners saw that their hope of gain was gone, they seized Paul and Silas and dragged them into the marketplace before the rulers. So these guys are upset, right? They're like, what did you just do, man? Like, that's how we make all our money. You just took this income source away from us. She was able to, like, tell fortunes, and people were coming paying us, and now you just cast out her power? And instead of being like, wow, that was unbelievable, they were upset. It's funny how sin does that. It's funny how sin corrupts us so much that broken people try to use other people's brokenness for their own gain. Like, you're not happy about it. You get upset about it. Like, don't take this away from me. And Jesus is like, I want to free you. You're like, don't touch it. I'd rather sit in my pain. I'd rather sit in my hurt. I'd rather watch others hurt. Don't show up. Instead of turning to Jesus, falling on your knees and go, I can't believe what you just did. The miracle that you just did, the amount of grace and love that we sang about earlier, that's for me. Like, cause me to run up to you and squeeze you, Jesus. Like, this is incredible. Instead, so often we get tangled up in our flesh. We're like, don't take that away. I enjoy that too much. Let me hold on to that one, Jesus. I remember that some of you guys know this story of a time we were in Guatemala and we were working with church plant down there and some people had gotten saved. It was a young couple from a village in the jungle in a place called Carvalho. And this young couple had a baby and the baby was sick, but we had some doctors with us, so they were able to treat the baby and leave medicine. And so we go off and we do our thing. And at the end of the week, we go back just to check on the baby. And as we come up to the house, we hear bling, 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 bling. We're like, what in the world is that? It's like a bell. And I go up to the door and I ask them if I can, I kind of like yell out in a little way they do and just kind of peek in the door and walk in. And I walk into them, the mom and the dad, standing in front of this little wooden table they have. And there's a big pot on the table full of water. And their baby is in the pot. And they have a bone in their hand. And they're banging this pot as this baby's kind of drowning in the water. I'm like, what in the world? And I freak out. You know, I'm like, what are you doing? You know, and like they're surprised I'm there. And so we have this conversation and come to find out that after we had left, the witch doctor of the town had found out that these people had given their life to Christ and were turning away from witchcraft and was upset. So when this baby was sick, that's his income source. They go to the witch doctor, or they used to, right, before they were saved. And so they would go to him and he would get the money for whatever treatment, which apparently was put your baby in a pot of water and hit it with a bone. And here, these are people that not only accepted Jesus, become part of the church, but also had been treated by like real doctors who gave real medicine. And yet still, under the pressure of these people, this guy, this witch doctor that came around them, that pressure was enough for them to cave and to go right back to their sin and go right back to the brokenness that didn't work before, which is why they gave their life to Christ in the first place. And here these guys are. You took away our financial gain. Going to Paul, like, what did you do? That pressure on Paul to be like, oh, you know, take it back, you know. Have you ever felt it? Do you know that pressure? You know what I'm talking about? And you're like, I'm following Jesus. And you get serious. You're like, God, maybe you come to Firehouse and you raise your hand one night and you're like, I need to give everything back to you. Like, I keep pulling things back. Lord, it's yours. And the next day you get up and you go to school and you're like, today I'm gonna just keep following Jesus. I'm keeping my eyes on Christ. And immediately people notice. And so you feel that pressure. What do you mean you're not cheating on your homework? What do you mean you're not gonna do this or that? And you're like, man, pressure builds. What do you do in that moment? Keep following Christ? Do you keep looking at Jesus and saying, no, like, Christ is more valuable to me? Or do you give in to the pressure? Do you go right back to the old way? And does it become this pattern in your life where you just keep saying, I'm sorry, God, and then going back to your sin. Sorry, God, and going back to your sin. And you live in this cycle of sin that just keeps kicking your butt. Or do you take your whole life, right, and stop just giving them pieces? You take the whole thing, you pick it up, and you go, God, I'm giving you all of me. No more games. I'm done playing games. Take the whole thing. My plans, my desires, my friends, my job, my future, my family, everything, like take it all, it belongs to you. God, I can trust you with it. You love me, you want the best for me. And when the pressure comes because you have all of it in your hands and I'm not holding anything back, I can just keep resting in you. I'm not gonna go running right back to my sin because there's some pressure from the world coming on. And here these guys are, and they're pressuring Paul, and they take it to the next level here. It says, and when they had brought them to the magistrates, they said, these men are Jews, and they're disturbing our city. They advocate customs that are not lawful for us as Romans to practice or accept. Look what happens. The crowd joined in attacking them, and the magistrates tore the garments off of them, gave orders to beat them with rods. And when they had inflicted many blows upon them, they threw them into prison, ordering the jailer to keep them safely. Like, Paul just did a good deed, didn't he? Here's this girl who had suffered for so long, all sorts of abuses and oppression and pain. He comes along and he helps her. He frees her from that. And you know what he gets in return? Beaten. Thrown into jail. Doesn't look fair, does it? You ever done something for someone and it didn't turn out quite the way you thought, as fairly as you thought? Maybe you kind of bit the bullet for helping somebody and you're like, man, like, why did I even help them? Because now this turned out so against me, you know, so poorly. There, that's where Paul is. You know, like, I just did this awesome thing. Why would it turn out like this? Why am I being punished as a criminal for doing the right thing? But you know, Paul never once complains here. He doesn't sit down in his cell and go, oh man, I can't believe you, God. Why would you let this happen? You know, like, he doesn't do that. It's incredible what Paul is about to do next, and we're not going to get there tonight, but you're about to see his response next week, and it's unbelievable. It's mind-blowing. You can read ahead if you can't wait, but I love his response. I love that his eyes just stay fixed on Jesus. And I beg the Lord every day, Lord, help my eyes stay fixed on you. Even when it gets tough, even when things hurt, even when I get this pressure to give up, like, God, help my eyes stay fixed on you because you truly are my prize. And I think that's the key. If I would share with you that nugget, that key tonight to doing this that Paul's doing, it's this, that Jesus really is your greatest prize. Because if he's not, and the pressure comes and try to take away your other prizes, you're going to cave. Like, don't take that, you know? But if your greatest prize is Jesus, there's nothing the world can do to you. There's nothing the world can take from you that will make you cave. Because you want Jesus more than anything else. Lydia, this woman from the passage before, this seller of purple, and now this slave girl are results of Paul just saying yes to Jesus. Just living a life of obedience. There wasn't some major strategy here. He was just hearing God say go, and he's like, all right. And when God said stopped, he stopped. And along this path, he's meeting these people that are getting saved, that are joining this church in Philippi. And we're going to see next week another person comes just because Paul is being obedient to Jesus. You're like, Rob, I'm not some big missionary. I'm not like a pastor. I'm not even like a great speaker. I'm not like, I don't know a ton of the Bible and all this theology. How will I ever help people to like come to know Jesus? Can you take a step? Can you just take a step of faith with Jesus? That's all it is. It's just saying yes. He's showing us right here, step by step by step. Just saying, I believe today. I'm scared. I don't know how I'm going to do this, God, but here's my step of faith, and I'm going to trust you. And as you do that, it's going to blow your mind what God is going to do through your life. God will surround you with opportunities. You didn't even know were there, like Lydia and this slave girl and this other guy next week that we're going to see as Paul's just saying yes. So tonight I ask you this. Will you take the walk with Jesus? You just say yes. And I know that for each of you, it's probably going to mean something different. You're in different spots, but it's the same solution for all of us to look Jesus in the face and say, I will receive your grace. I'll rest in your arms. Tonight, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to take that step. Will you guys close your eyes and bow your heads with me? The band's going to come up and lead us in some worship in a second. And as they're making their way up, just will you just say something to God real quick? Will you ask him a question? Will you ask the Lord to show you places in your heart where he's asking you to take that step? God, what's the step of faith that you're calling me to do? Because listen, there's not a person in this room, not an adult or a student that is here listening to this message tonight, that God doesn't have some step for you. I don't know what it is, so don't look to me. I want you to turn to Jesus right now. I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to ask God and say, what is the step? What faith do you want from me, Lord? What step of faith are you asking me to step out in and hear what the Lord has to say?